This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
A very pleasant good afternoon and happy Tuesday. From your pals Grant and Danny, live all over the DMV on 106.7 The Fan. Wherever you go, listen to us on the Odyssey app, and you can watch us in high definition right now on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page. We've got a tremendous show planned for you. First and foremost, Danny, we're in the giving spirit today.
Oh, yeah.
We are giving away Game 5 Caps tickets as they try to wrap up their series with the Montreal Canadiens. For tomorrow night's game at Capital One Arena back here in D.C., we're giving those away at 20 after the hour, all show long. Your first chance to win in about 16 minutes right here on G&D at 220, but you can win at 220, 320, 420, and 520, so you better be listening today.
All the live long day, come see the Caps close out the Canadiens. I heard Earl doing the updates. You heard those golden pipes, and he had a good line about put the Canadiens out of our misery. That's a good way to put it. I like that. A little turn of a phrase right
there. That is well played.
I'm all set on them. I'm good.
That is a guy who's been around the block watching some Caps hockey with the pipes, Earl Forsey. Here's your guest rundown today. It is a very good rundown. We've got Josh Connerly, the first-round pick and offensive tackle taken out of Oregon by the Commanders at number 29. He joins us coming up in about 25 minutes, so make sure you're listening at the bottom of the hour here at 2:30. At 3:30 today, Kenyon McDuffie will be on the show. D.C. council member. He is for the work being done at the RFK site and a new stadium in D.C. He was at the press conference with the mayor yesterday. McDuffie on the show coming up next hour. Charles Allen, not so much. Another council member who is not for the stadium, best we can tell. We'll ask him directly about that at 4:30 today. But we will talk to him. Could he be shifted? Could he end up being pro-stadium? They need 7 votes as of right now. It seems like they've got 4. That's your guest lineup on Grant and Danny today. But to give you what I have as my current tabulation, Danny, so 7 votes. This is like election night. You need 270 to win, right? 4 yeses, Felder, Pinto, Bonds, and McDuffie. 2 noes, NATO put out a statement saying, not up in here. And Allen put out a similar statement, who joins us today. And then 5 to be determined. Like, may say yes, may say no. I'm putting Mendelsohn on that list. He's a no for now, dog, but he might not eventually be a no. He was on our show yesterday, the chair of the D.C. City Council. And then Henderson, Parker, Fruman, George, and White, all still TBD. So they need 7. They've got 4. There are 5 council members, of which they need 3 to say yes, who we don't know how they're going to lean.
Now, that's... It implies, A, there's uncertainty, but B, that doesn't mean that the deal now is take it or leave it. I mean, this is what's been announced. There's an agreement in terms of both sides from the mayor's office and from the team are willing to do what they've laid out. There's room for more negotiation. Again, anybody that's lived around here long enough knows that these antics, whatever you want to call them, from council members or otherwise, who see their moment to get some attention, good, bad, or indifferent, this is what happened with the D.C. Stadium. It was all done. It was signed, sealed, delivered. Everything was done. And then Linda Kropp made her presence known and said, not like this. And then some tweaks happened. And then we actually had the announcement. So who knows? There are different council members have expressed certain misgivings about certain parts of it. That's their job to do so, right? Everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. We're sports people, so we want the sports thing to get done. But everybody's doing what they're supposed to do so far. So if it gets tweaked, a comma moves here, or a period changes hands, or an underline turns into an X, who knows? But yeah, as it stands, it's not a take it or leave it, we're voting today. It's a, hey, is there any massage available? So TBD.
There will be politics. There
politics
will be
going
lawyers.
Politics, yeah.
There will be negotiating, right? I mean, like, all of these things have to keep happening. I think people are a little bit snake bit because of the National Landing, that Potomac Yard operation.
Oh, yeah, everybody's skeptical, rightfully so.
And I don't just mean Ted Leonsis this year. I mean, remember way back when, Kent Cook, the owner then, had the same press conference Ted had. Also had the images in front of him set up on the dais. And there was never a stadium. They ended up in Rowlajohn, Maryland. So these press conferences, while exciting, don't always mean that the ball's going to cross the goal line. But I just trust this ownership group. They don't seem to miss very often. And I think yesterday with the commissioner sitting next to Miro Bowser and Josh Harris, there's enough interest by all parties to get this thing done. The commissioner was not there with Ted Leonsis when he had his press conference. The governor certainly was, but I think the politics were very different. And you can't not acknowledge, Danny, that Virginia's never had a stadium and doesn't seem to really want one. That certainly the most powerful people in the state
right
now didn't want one. In D.C., before you even start trying to count votes, four people are sitting there going, let's do this with the mayor. I think it's going to happen, but it's not going to be seamless or easy, probably.
Yeah, the local D.C. political scene, this is a time-honored thing, whatever it is. Everybody's had a different pet or baby, whatever you want to call it. For us, their normal runs of legislation, to be honest with you, not really what we do here on this radio program. But this is a stadium deal, so all of a sudden now we're very invested in local politics and otherwise. And this is kind of the song and dance. So if you're not familiar with it, get used to it. You're going to see an awful lot from folks as they kind of leave the door open for them to change their mind or not, and certain things are met, and now we can sit there and have our golden shovels in the ground. TBD, but I'm with you. There's enough momentum where I actually feel better about it maybe than my experience would lead me to.
Enough on the stadium for now. We'll certainly be talking about it off and on throughout the show today. The Capitals are idle. Very, very rare back-to-back days off in the playoffs. I thought when I originally saw the schedule, I just assumed there must be some concert or some kind of event at Cap One Arena tonight. But at least on the public schedule, there's nothing going on there. So I don't really know why they're not playing tonight. Maybe it's a TV thing. The NHL wants to stagger the series and the games so that they have enough games going in each direction. That's all I can come up with. But what should have been tonight's Game 5 is tomorrow night. So it'll help them rest up. I mean, both teams are going to benefit from that. But it gives you one more day and a chance to have a real legitimate physical practice for Alexi Protas. All signs seem to point to, if they want him to play tomorrow, he will play tomorrow.
That's why I'll take that extra day. Like, if it's basically like tonight, he probably doesn't play tomorrow. Maybe he does. Fine.
I think generally in the playoffs, I would say that too, because it's so grueling.
Mm-hmm.
Every other day is the rhythm of the National Hockey League that John Carlson has told us on the show. Players prefer. You get the day off, rest up, you play the next day. More than that can influence timing a little bit. But I think one more day at the end of a long season in the middle of the playoffs is probably beneficial. And also just to get Protas through the real workout he needs to make sure that he can do everything. I wonder if they'll hold him out because they have the advantage of being up 3-1. I mean, they've been on the wrong end of so many 3-1 leads that went awry that maybe as an organization they just say, let's not worry about getting another day for him. Let's just finish this series. But I think it's got to come into the conversation as you determine whether or not he's going to play. The other thing is, it's not like there's someone obviously struggling that you could take out. Ryan Leonard's mostly been really good. Taylor Radish, after a bad game, one with a couple penalties, has mostly been very solid. Andrew Mangiapane was one of the other wings down the depth chart that you would say maybe is a guy that would be taken out of the lineup at some point.
Potted the goal.
Scored the biggest goal of the season to give them the lead. So yeah, when Protas is ready, you get him back on ice, no questions asked, and the rest sorts itself out. But there's not anybody you go, man, I need him back because this guy's really killing us.
Yeah, good problem to have, right? I mean, you'd rather have too many than too few, but you still have to make a decision, and it's not easy.
The Commanders signed a kicker today. So thank you, Zane Gonzalez, for your work.
Appreciate the time.
Exit stage left. Matt Gay will be the kicker for the Commanders this season. veteran. He has kicked in Tampa. I think he's most known for having two excellent seasons with the Rams. He most recently kicked the last couple of years for the Colts. But you heard Earl mention this in his update. A one-year deal worth over $4 million. This is the largest guaranteed money for a kicker in a one-year contract that's ever been signed, which is interesting. Tells you, A, how badly they felt like they needed to upgrade the position, and B, also that they still got enough money to do everything they want. Because you wouldn't spend on a kicker when you already have a veteran on your roster if you didn't have the money to do it. But you got plenty of cash. You have a need. He was available, and they got the contract done. Last year, he was 31 for 37 on field goal attempts. One thing that stood out to me when I looked up his numbers, he had by far his worst year on 50-plus yard field goals. He was 3 for 9 from 50-plus last season. And maybe their thinking is, we go for so many fourth downs that when I call on him, if I'm Dan Quinn, it's not going to be from 50-plus nearly as often as another team does. Maybe that's the logic, because when you're in that range on fourth and four or less, you're going for it. And maybe they just think it was a fluke season because he's had some good years kicking from deep.
In fact, he owns the record for most 50-plus kicks in a single game. He had four a couple years ago in one game. So I think some of that is fleeting, you know, good sample, bad sample, everything in between.
But still, last year, that was a struggle.
Last year, he was bad.
And they don't seem to care that much about it.
Yeah, last year, he was 100% bad in that regard. There's no getting around that. But, you know, again, this could be we think that was a fluke, or we're not concerned about it, or something in between. But yeah, I mean, that's you're basically, you had a placeholder in Gonzalez, as we all kind of were hoping that it was. And this is a guy with, as you said, a pretty good track record in three different stops.
I like this signing, though. You upgraded at an important position where I didn't feel good. Last year, even though the Zane Gonzalez thing never really reared its head and became a huge problem, he missed kicks in the playoffs. People forget because they won the game, but the doink that went in against the Bucs 3 inches further toward the outside of the goalpost, that clanks, comes back toward the field, and you may lose that game before your playoff run ever started. There was just no reason not to address kicker. I was hoping they didn't do it in the draft, and after they didn't fall the way that maybe they needed to for a draft pick or that they did other things correctly, they immediately go out and sign the veteran. But I like this from a philosophical standpoint of, I think it sets the table for post-draft seeing that they still are going to go out and sign some one-year deals to fix some of their problems. Edge is next.
Still there, yeah.
You got to go get a defensive end, whether that's Matthew Judon or Preston Smith or whoever it might be on the scrap heap. You got to sign one, maybe two of those guys after you didn't draft a single edge, your biggest need in your five-player draft class.
They don't seem, or let me phrase it a different way. They're not going to panic. This front office is not going to reach. They're not going to do what they perceive as bad value just because there's a hole. I think they've proven that over a couple off seasons, right? They're not going to overcommit. Whereas in years past, think about when bad leadership was in charge. If there was a gaping maw or some sort of huge problem, it was, I know what to do. Here comes a celebrity. Here comes a big dollar signing, an overcommitment, a huge salary for a guy that either was disgruntled somewhere else or had kind of played a slightly different role, whatever it was. You can think of the signings instantaneously. Everyone from Josh Norman to Albert Haynesworth to everything in between to try to fix some of these problems. This is a group that says, we're not going to do it just to do it. We're not going to do it to hear ourselves make a phone call. If we don't think this is a massive upgrade and a good value for us, we'll just be patient. And that can lead to frustration from those of us that are sort of living and breathing this thing every day, looking, just refreshing that our lad's depth chart going, there's nobody new. There's nobody new at that edge spot. There's nobody new. With all due respect, I'm not counting on Jacob Martin making a huge leap. Do something. They're not going to get out of their patient value approach.
Way and Gay, your kickers now. Tressway, Matt Gay, your kicker and your punter for the Commanders, a tandem that hopefully will be a strength for them on special teams this season. Finally, we have not gotten to talk about the draft class because yesterday our show was all of about 90 minutes long. The Nats played and gave up 19 runs during this year time slot. By the way, they're in Philadelphia tonight. Ace Mackenzie Gore on the hill taking on Zach Wheeler, the top two pitchers in the National League in strikeouts. So there's going to be some swings and misses tonight.
There'll be some punches tonight.
Gore has 53. Wheeler has 50. Both have been very good for their NL East clubs. But because we didn't talk about the draft class, I thought we could do it off the top before Josh Connerly joins us coming up in just a few. Connerly was the pick at 29. We did get the opportunity for much of Friday to discuss that thinking, and while it was not one of their biggest needs or something we saw coming, makes a lot of sense that you want to grab an anchor and a bookend with Laremy Tunsil up front. You can't go wrong addressing your offensive line. You cannot throw enough assets at that position group, especially when your number one asset is young quarterback Jaden Daniels and his protection. So we both sign off and like that. After the first round, I made the case that they needed to do everything they could to trade back, even if it meant taking 85 cents on the dollar. They didn't get a deal that they liked, clearly, because they ended up sticking at 61, and they made a really good pick in Trey Amos, the cornerback from Mississippi, who is long and physical. He, to me, is straight out of the Dan Quinn mold. This is a 6'1", 200-pound corner who's still agile enough to flip his hips and run a little bit. But I think his length and his physicality is going to look like one of those Legion of Booms corners from Seattle over the years. This was not a guy that I thought would be there at 61.
I didn't either, no.
So to get a starter opposite Lattimore, to be able to either have, you know, Sandra still go into the nickel, or maybe, you know, push Amos and play at corner, and you can move them around and now have depth at a position where they were paper thin all of last year. I really, really liked what they did. My preference was to move back so that you'd just have a bigger draft class. But like with all of their picks, Danny, when they were on the board, what they did when they're on the clock actually made a lot of sense.
100%. And there's a theme, and we're going to get to that kind of throughout, I think, as we talk about them. But we now know their type, right? Last year, you saw a couple of factors, leadership roles, team captain, et cetera. And the common theme here, their Venn diagram, where it lines up, get used to hearing the RAS. That is the raw athletic score. They like guys with green ones. They like guys that are viewed in the what is known as the elite category of this stuff. When you measure somebody's size and then all their attributes, 40-yard dash, 20-yard split, 10-yard split, shuttles, three cones, vertical jump, broad jump, etc. All those things go into basically telling you what kind of natural athlete a person is. And anything above 8 is considered outstanding. Every one of their draft picks this year was well above 8. This is a theme. This is what they're looking for. They are looking for the most athletic guys possible. And if you happen to have a leadership role, that's great. If you happen to be kind of, you know, their type character guys, etc., we now kind of know the type, and every one of these guys fits that bill. The guy actually with the lowest score in this raw athletic score measurement here is actually Amos, and the production was so good that it makes sense. Similarly to last year, Mikey Sandra still was the only guy that didn't have an elite raw athletic score, and we know that guy's made of guts and stick-to-itiveness and aggression, so all works out just fine. If they're going to make an exception, it's going to be at a certain spot. But Amos certainly fits that bill. And you go down the rest of their draft, they got athletes. And I think that's what they're always looking for.
Jalen Lane, the wide receiver they took out of Virginia Tech with pick number 128. That was a fourth round pick. I think that's the most curious selection, even though I like it. He's twitchy. He's got speed. They used him as a gadget guy with a lot of end arounds and stuff in the backfield at Virginia Tech. And I'm sure Cliff Kingsbury is going to do the same. My guess is, though, he's going to be their punt returner, too.
I think so.
And I think if he's their punt returner and he plays a little bit at receiver and you get some packages where he can get some jet action and do some things in the backfield, then it makes plenty of sense. As a just straight wide receiver, I don't ever expect him to be a guy that goes out and catches 65 balls or anything like that. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. He didn't have great quarterback play at Tech. But I think using him in that almost like Randall L role of doing a little bit of everything offensively, mm-hmm. moving all over the place, and then being a punt returner, I think there could be big value there. And if you saw the Peters phone call to him, he told him, you were our number one punt returner on our board. So I'd be shocked if he doesn't end up being a fixture on special teams, maybe even their full-time kick returner too.
Speed, 4.34 in that 40-yard dash.
What I wanted.
Yeah, so to me, it's interesting, though, that he wasn't asked to be anything other than, to your point, the gadget guy, doing the end-arounds, doing the bubble screens, close to the line of scrimmage. I'd like to test it. Let's see if that 4.34 can run a couple nine routes. Let me just see. Let me put you in motion. Maybe put you in a stack to help your release. Go as deep as you can, as fast as you can, a couple times. I'd like to notice. But at a minimum, day one punt returner. I think you're right.
We are giving away game 5 tickets for the Caps and the Canadians on the show at 20 after the hour all show long. So right now, congratulations to caller 9 at 800-636-1067. You're winning a pair of tickets to game 5 tomorrow night. First round of the Stanley Cup playoffs for the Caps. Game is tomorrow against Montreal. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com. NHL.com. Josh Connerly, chosen at 29 overall by the Commanders in round one, joins us next on G&D here on The Fan.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
At 3:30 today, he is for a new stadium at the RFK site. We're looking forward to chatting with him in a little over an hour. But right now, let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning in the DMV. That's where we'll find the 29th overall pick in this past week's draft. Washington's first round pick, tackle out of Oregon, Josh Connerly Jr. Josh, take us back to draft night, what the experience was like and what the scene was like when you found out you were going to be a Commander.
Yeah, I was back home in Seattle with all my family at my dad's house. And, the moment was unreal. Just continuing to watch names get called and you're just sitting there anxious, you know. But you know it's going to be I was very confident in myself that it was going to be the first round. It's just a matter of when, you know what I mean? But when I seen that VA area code pop up, I was like, all right, now this the one right here. So I answered it and AP was on the phone and I was like, man, my reaction initially was just like, it was really unreal. And like, I was just really excited and anxious. And I knew that I'm going into a pretty perfect situation. So I know that it's all going to work out really, really good. So,
you mentioned the call to your phone. I didn't know this. I don't know that anybody did until we heard some of the details with what happened to Shador. But it's a special phone the league gives you, right? It's not like people are calling your normal cell phone. So are you just waiting for like this random phone to ring?
Nah, it's your regular phone.
Okay, I thought I read somewhere that the league like gives the draft picks a phone that all the teams have the number to.
Nah, so that's why the prank calls happen, is because you're using your regular phone number. You know what I mean? So if anybody just gets your regular phone number, they can call you, you know?
So you're waiting for the call to get drafted for, in your case, it wasn't that long, but a couple hours, let's say. And like your buddies are, if they're texting you and being like, hey, bro, how's it going? Like every time your phone's going off, you think it could be a
team. I got one prank call. It was somebody in Colorado acting like they were the Broncos. but besides that, I didn't really get all the multiple ones like everybody else. I can only feel for them because mine wasn't as bad and like as cruel as some of the other ones. But yeah, I mean, with guys that are waiting multiple days and, you know, getting 4 or 5 calls, it's just insane.
Josh Connerly, new Commanders lineman. So they call you from Denver when they're on the clock, I guess? And what did they say? Yes. Or how did you weed out that it was a prank?
They were just like, is this Josh? And I was like, yeah. And then they're just like, this is so-and-so from the Broncos. And then they just like, and then like, I was like, you know, I was like, oh my God, like what? And then they just hung up. And I was just like,
that's terrible.
I was just like, okay.
So let's go back. Josh Connerly with us here on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. So what were you hearing before the first round? It's such an unpredictable, inexact science, obviously. But what was your agent and some of the research you guys had done saying about the window where you could come off the board?
I mean, it was anything really 10 down. And there was no like specific team because I've had visits with about eight teams, formaled with 12 different teams. And I mean, I really could have fell anywhere, you know what I mean? But we didn't know it was going to be in the first round. So
what were your pre-draft experiences like with Washington? I mean, I'm imagining you could take us through, but like right. Combine, formal, and then do you notice that there are certain teams that like you? It's like speed dating where you go, hey, I kind of hit it off with her a little bit, or is it all blended?
Yeah. So in Mobile, I met with Scans one time. That was my only interaction with them until I met the one time at Senior Bowl, and then I formaled with them at the Combine, and then they had me in for a 30 visit as well. And so I'm not saying it was a lot of interactions for sure.
So now you come to Washington, and the first thing I would imagine when they call your name is that initial conversation. We get to see some of the call that you had with Adam Peters, but mm-hmm. how well did you hit it off with, or what was your relationship like with Bobby, the O-line coach, and yeah. some of those guys? And then after what we see, like, what's the rest of the night like?
Right. Yeah. So after LT shoots me a call, I miss it because of just like everything that's going on. But he shoots me a text. We text back and forth a couple times. And then like OG calls me, Coach State calls me, like, everybody from the organization has seemed just like just continued the call. So I'm just answering a bunch of different calls, you know, like everyone introducing themselves again, and just like, you know, excited to have you here, stuff like that. But then yeah, and then I just got all my flight stuff set up, and then they flew me and my family out there to like re-meet everybody, and yeah.
Commander's tackle Josh Connerly was the 29th pick in the draft, their first rounder, joining us on G&D. Did you hear from Jaden on draft night, or was it not till the next day that you got to chat with him a little bit?
Yeah, next day. And I might say we talked on FaceTime for a little bit once I got there, and like had a couple texts back and forth. But yeah, no, definitely super chill guy.
The O-line has been rebuilt a little bit, the tackle spot specifically, the trade for Laramie, and now going and getting you. Is Tunsil a guy you studied at all, or, you know, what lineman do you kind of pattern your game after and look up to?
Definitely. Growing up, I wasn't necessarily an O-lineman. I was always like a bigger guy. But once I started playing O-line full-time, like Rashawn Slater, Laramie Tunsil, Tyron Smith, like those are my three guys that I studied a whole lot. And even here at Oregon, like, we watched a lot of stuff as a group, like a lot of the stuff that Laramie did, that was teach tape for us, you know what I mean? So definitely somebody I looked up to and always try to take little things from, for sure. And it's going to be a great opportunity to learn from him and everybody else in the room.
So the idea that you weren't a lineman growing up, you just referenced, is decently well documented since the draft. But for some of my yeah. listeners, go back through that. So when did you – what were you initially – until when, and then when did you transition to line? How did that process play out?
Yeah, so my first year ever playing football was five. I played O-line, and then after that, I became a running back because I wanted to do something different. I wanted to be O-lineman. I wanted the ball in my hands. I was a running back until eighth grade. Then ninth grade, I play like running back, tight end, D line. Like, I always played D line linebacker growing up as well, on the defensive side. Like in Seattle, that's just like the type of wall we play. Like, everyone's two way player. In then 10th grade, we had lost all of our starting O line and D line from my freshman year. And then I became our starting left tackle my 10th grade year. And from that point on, like, recruiting and everything just kind of took off from there. So. Yeah.
So were you getting carries as a freshman on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, a little bit. Honestly, I got a couple. Mainly passes, though. I was mainly a tight end. I was that running back, very minimal, more like fullback type thing.
So everybody's seen the clips then from your Oregon time when you've touched the football, obviously catching a touchdown. What was the direct snap play? And was that a one-off that you guys ran where you're on the goal line getting a snap?
That was the run. It was a one-off for a two-point conversion that we worked on for quite a while during the season.
But there's not many tackles in America who are pulling that off, and we've never seen that post Refrigerator Perry in the league. So did you go to a coach and be like, hey, you know my tape says I can run the ball, or like how did that play out?
I mean, Joe Lorig is one of the best special teams minds that there is, and he was always looking out for me, being a Washington guy himself, and it's just funny because like every year it's always something like, JC, I'm gonna hook you up, you know, I got something for you. So I mean, it's kind of like they know I'm a big athlete, so you know, when I put it to use, you feel me? So
well, I covered Trent Williams when I was on the beat for 4 years here.
Okay.
And Trent was one of the great athletic tackles ever to play for the team. But I always talk about how when he plays hoops, he would play point guard and he would go between the legs and he'd dunk and it was just different. But you're one of those rare guys that, you know, has that ability to move. But we're kind of seeing the league, I feel like, trend in that direction. If you could give me a thought on that, but with like the bubbles and the smokes and all the screens, it's Cliff's runs. You almost need a guy who can get out in space better than your normal tackle, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like we kind of are the prototype of what you would want. I mean, obviously everyone loves a big mauler, you know what I mean? But we do the same things just in a different way. You know what I mean? And, our builds are just, it's just because of, I feel like, because of like the athletic background, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like you got your alignment that wrestle, and then you got your alignment that play basketball, and then, you know, you got your ones that throw. Like, they're like, we all are athletes in our own ways, you know what I mean? But I feel like the small, like, you know, smaller build that kind of build up into bigger guys, those are the ones that are starting to become more of the trend and being able to get out in space and stuff like that, like you said.
Josh Connerly here on G&D on 106.7 The Fan. So Laramie, when we talked a lot about him and two people who have covered him from Houston, the book is one of the great pass-blocking tackles in recent league history, but maybe the run-blocking is not as much a strength. I don't know if it's fair to even say that about you, because at Oregon, I just think of you guys slinging the ball around, but you obviously had successful backs. Do you view yourself, if you were going to major in one, would you say pass blocking, or like what's your kind of nastiness run blocking thoughts?
Well, I feel like I'm pretty balanced. I do say I thrive more in pass protection, just because of my background playing basketball and just being able to stay in front. But I mean, I can get nasty too. You know what I mean? Fit, as long as I fit my hands tight and run my feet, I mean, I'm a dump somebody. So, to answer your question, I would say pass protection probably.
When we talk to baseball players or something, it's like, hey, you could catch a home run, or you rob a home run or hit a home run or whatever. For you, what's your favorite thing to do? Like get out in space, pancake someone or maul someone in the run game, or just anchor on against a speed guy and just stop them? Like what's the most fun thing to do?
The best thing, and this is I would say cliche quote, but moving a man from point A to point B against his will, that's the best thing about playing offensive line. You know what I mean? Obviously protecting your quarterback, making sure he's nice and, you know, as your quarterback has a perfectly clean jersey at the end of the game, you did your job. You know what I mean? But moving a man from point A to point B against his will is probably the greatest feeling. And then dumping him on his back, rolling off on top and then getting up and hitting the little swag jog. That's the best feeling.
Most of us will not be able to relate to that, but I can certainly understand why that would be a lot of fun. I would like to be able to do that, but I'm not Josh Connerly. Well, Josh, we're fired up, man. We're happy to have you in D.C. I appreciate the time. We're looking forward to seeing you get out there, rookie minicamp, and get on the grass. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you for having me on.
Josh Connerly, new tackle with the Commanders, who's going to be playing some games, ideally, in the city at the RFK site. Are there deal breakers for you with any of what we found out yesterday, whether that means the roof or the lack of parking or PSLs. We'll get into that next on The Fan.
That was the Washington that I remembered. When on Sundays, everything stopped. Everyone was glued to their TV or in the stadium. And we've already seen a reawakening of that spirit, but we want to bring it back. Now we want to bring the Commanders home with a new RFK that our fans will love, our opponents will fear. It'll be loud. We want to make it about football, but also about the city and the community. And we want to host the biggest and best events in the world.
Owner Josh Harris yesterday at the big announcement that the Commanders are planning on coming home and playing in Washington, D.C. Kenyon McDuffie, council member, who's going to be one of the currently there's a dozen council members. There's normally 13.
Yeah, there's an open seat.
Open seat that may be filled by the same person?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they got into some legal trouble.
Uh-huh.
No longer on the council.
Right.
But running again.
Yep.
And front runner to possibly get their seat back.
That is the summary.
Okay. So they need 7 votes. It needs to be 7-6, essentially. There's 12 right now. We'll ask Kenyon McDuffie, who was at the proceedings and presumably is for the stadium where he leans. Charles Allen has been very much against publicly any kind of public money for a stadium. He's going to stop by at 4:30 today. Remember, we're giving away tickets to Game 5 Caps Canadians at 20 after 3, 20 after 4, 20 after 5. So make sure you're listening for the remainder of the program if you want those tickets on Grant and Danny. But we didn't really get much of a chance yesterday because we were out 90 minutes after the show started for the Nats to talk about this stadium with our listeners and possible deal breakers and or areas of concern. So I do want to open up the phones right now on that, Danny, at 800-636-1067. Are you all in or do you have reservations and what are they? 800-636-1067. And the couple things I jotted down yesterday that I know could be sticking points just based on years of taking calls and talking to listeners about this.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the roof. A lot of people in my social media feed seemed very, very bothered by the roof that's going to be on this stadium. And it's very likely not going to be retractable. It's going to be a full-time closed stadium. And that bothers a lot of people. I think it's the right decision. We can get into that. But I know that that does annoy folks.
People who haven't been plugged into what's going on with stadiums will go, wait a minute. The rest of us who've been reading every time someone else gets a shovel in the ground as to how it's going to look and where it is, where it's going to go. Are going, yeah, that's probably par for the course. But if you're just kind of waking up to the news, that probably comes as a shock that an NFC East team would have a dome. It's the way of the world, man.
But if you don't have a roof, you don't get a Super Bowl.
Yep.
So if you want one of those, you don't have a roof, you don't get a Final Four. If you want one of those, the amount of events you can do and therefore money you can make to make back this public money and to help the city changes massively if you don't have a roof. So they're going to. Now, someone would say, why not retractable? And the answer to that is it costs almost $1 billion more.
Then you need another 40 years of events to make back the money.
Right, exactly. Another Super Bowl and another NFL draft or something, because they're likely to get those couple of things when this stadium becomes a reality. The other major sticking point that I could foresee being a problem is parking, because that means lack of tailgating, and just generally that means giant pain in the butt to go to other than taking public transportation, which if it's easy is fine, but a lot of people don't love that. So 8,000 spots compared to almost 30,000 spots currently at the stadium, downsizing basically a quarter of what you have, 65,000 seats and 8,000 parking spots, not ideal. A lot of those, by the way, parking decks, parking garages. Cool that the city will own them because there's nothing that'll make them back money faster than parking garages.
Mm-hmm.
But the big issue there is there's no tailgating in those. And we heard from a lot of people who said if they can't tailgate, they'd rather just be in Virginia or Maryland.
Which it's not my proclivity, but I understand that. It's become part of why you did it. If you're one of the hardcore tailgaters, so to speak, you went, all I did was go when no one else was going, when it was miserable and awful and stupid and pointless, and that's where I had fun, and that's part of the culture, the thing that I enjoy, and you're taking that from me when I've done nothing wrong, I get being upset about that. I do. Again, I'm not, but I totally 100% understand those that would object to that or have a problem with it.
So, and people will make up this list as they call in here, and we'll take calls start the next hour, 800-636-1067. What am I missing? Roof, parking, going to be two things to get pushback. PSLs are the bane of everybody's existence, and they should be.
Yeah, I get that too.
Because they're ridiculous. But they're also almost a prerequisite to a new stadium at this point. And for those of you that don't know, the PSL is basically a down payment that allows you to then pay for tickets.
It doesn't go towards the cost of the ticket, though. You pay the money for the right to pay the money.
And it could be a lot of money or a little bit of money. Little bit of money. It's like $700, $1,000, whatever.
Yeah.
But you pay that much, and all you're doing is just having now permission to get your seat for the season. It's just money that you're paying on top of the season tickets.
Yeah, it's a slap in the face.
And by the way, those prices are all going to go up substantially, obviously, as you'd expect with a new stadium in the city.
You'd think so. Yeah, I mean, to me, this is my biggest concern. So they could address it and nail it, but I don't trust everyone to get this 100% right. And it goes to parking. It's all a big part of it. I need those logistics to be outstanding. They weren't before. And now the city is the population of this area is 2.5x, 3x, whatever it was that it was, decades ago. I need to be able to get in and get out, whether I'm driving, boating, metroing, walking, rollerblading with poles that I could store in a locker, biking, whatever I'm doing, it needs to be easy. And I don't know how, given the current status, it's going to be easy. Thoughtful people need to be thoughtful, so I don't know how you solve it.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. We'll get to your calls on this next. 800-636-1067. Areas of concern? What do you love about the plan? How are you feeling? That's the question on G&D.